Thank you for listening to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. Larry Suttle, the preaching minister of over 20 years, weekly instructs and encourages those attending the services at the 10th and Broad Church of Christ in Wichita Falls, Texas. Let's join Larry now for this week's lesson.
Next Sunday is sort of a historic day for the 10th and Broad Church. We will have a candidate who is interested in the preaching position here at 10th and Broad. That has not happened in, a good many years, almost 30 years for this church. Are you excited? Well, you ought to be. I mean, something that hasn't happened in 30 years. Nikki and I have not done that in over 27 years, and yet I remember it like it was yesterday when Nikki and I would go to a new congregation and try out is the language that preachers use. There's nothing like it, by the way, and in all the world. There's no job interview like it that I can think of. You're not meeting with an employer or a board of just a few people. Here you are meeting with 200 to 700 people, all giving you the eyeball. Here's your wife. Here's your children, in our case, small children. With the candidate coming, he'll have small children. And you hope against hope they'll be on their best behavior, which chances are they won't be. Your stomach is churning. Oh, it's just a wonderful, delightful experience. Like I say, I remember it like it was yesterday. You drive back maybe late that night after a full day of meeting all these strange people, and you get all these names thrown at you, and you'd like to remember just a few of them, but there's no way you're going to. And you may never hear from that church again. Did you know that? You may never hear from that church again. In fact, you may hear in a roundabout way a rumor or some other third-hand report that that church has hired someone else. You didn't even hear directly from them that they hired anybody. Now, you won't do that. I know you're a classier congregation than some churches are. Probably someone in that church was designated to write all the applicants and let them know that they hired somebody else. It just never quite got done. Anyway, that's the experience of trying out in a congregation. And that happens here. Next week, Lord willing, a candidate comes to preach and teach a Bible class in this congregation next Lord's Day. It'll be a unique experience for me sitting out with you listening to this person. I've been asked, well, that will that be an awkward thing for you? Well, I hope it's not an awkward thing for him, for me to be out there. I thought about wearing a disguise so he'll not recognize. Mike, could I borrow your disguise that I saw you wearing on Facebook the other day? I hope it won't be an awkward thing for him. I guarantee you I'll be the only one in this building who will understand what it's like to be him. I will empathize with him and Nikki with her. Like no one else in this congregation. So I hope it won't be awkward for him. But awkward for me, absolutely not. This transition is my idea. That is, when I say that, no one asked me to begin this process. I am excited about my new role. And I want you to feel good about bragging on him and his sermon. It will be a new style of preaching than what you are accustomed to. He has different heroes, new models of preaching than my heroes were, of course. But that's good. It'll be different. That's good. We will be trying to reach new people. That's good. We're trying to reach young families. That's good. And so everything about it will be good. And so someone a while ago came up and patted me on the back and said, "Well, how's my favorite preacher this morning?" And I said, "Oh, I'm fine, but now I hope that changes next week." And he'll be your favorite preacher starting next week. And it needs to be. At least you need to tell him he's your favorite preacher if he's the one hired. And I want him to be. It's not an awkward thing for me. I've had my day. You've bragged on me plenty of times, even many times I didn't need to be bragged on. You feel free to brag on him, and that'll be a good thing. I genuinely look forward to his coming. I look forward to being part of a new young staff. We have a new campus minister, a young campus minister. We have a new young youth minister. Old Elmer's still kind of old and crotchety, but he looks younger than I do, and so he can get by with it for a little while longer. But really, this old church, this old downtown church, needs a young staff. It really does, and I said this years ago. And this is all a good thing, and I am looking forward to it. And but with the Suttles staying on staff, in a role. Maybe we need a reminder. And so this morning, I want us to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and put preachers in perspective this morning. I think it's important to do that. Keep preaching and preachers in perspective. And I am saying this more about me than about him, the new candidate. I want you to know that. I'm not trying to minimize him. I'm saying this more to minimize me and keep me in perspective. Well, anyway, it's important to keep preaching and preachers in perspective. And it's important for churches to keep them in perspective. It certainly was the case with Corinth. And it's important for preachers to keep themselves in perspective. Sometimes that gets out of whack because there can be wrong attitudes among preachers. There can be rivalries among preachers. It's sad to say. But that's true with anyone, any human being in any field. It's not just religion. It can be true in any field. In fact, I was made aware this week in my preparing my lesson of a book titled Prize Fight, subtitled The Race and the Rivalry to Be the First in Science. You know, we would like to think of science and scientists being coldly objective, coldly analytical, dealing with facts, coming to conclusions for the betterment of mankind, wouldn't we? And just wanting to do the right thing, some of us assume that's the way it is. Some of them want us to assume that's just the way it is. But in this book, Prize Fight, it goes into detail how that oftentimes with the announcement of funding of a certain project, the race is on. And a lot of chicanery goes in to the race for achievement. And that data is hidden, is withheld, is protected. That material is plagiarized, is stolen, and the result is not good science, but bad science. And sometimes colleagues win a Nobel Prize. One man wins a Nobel Prize, and a colleague is sidelined and is written out of history. Sometimes data is falsified. Interesting. And two examples, which I thought was pretty amazing. The discovery of streptomycin and the rivalry between magnetic resonance imaging pioneers. And it goes into detail, all of the chicanery that went on to things that we take for granted among the scientists involved. And coincidentally, this week, is again, as I was preparing this lesson, I came across another article talking about succession plans for senior pastors. And how that if there's not a succession plan in place for senior pastors, now of course this was in a denominational context where there's power invested in one man called the pastor. It's not a New Testament organization plan. It's a denominational, which is a dangerous thing, because when you invest power in one man, well, it is dangerous. But how that power struggles come in, money issues, who's going to speak for the church? Does the senior pastor want to go? You know, that's always a big issue. Does he want to go? Etc. Who's going to be the spokesman for the church? That kind of thing. Sometimes there's division. I know of a situation in Churches of Christ. Large church. Elders went to the preacher. We think it's time for a change. He didn't want to change. So he went off to the edge of town, started a new church. About half the members went out there. That's the way it is today. Almost broke the existing church. Well, those are the kind of things you get into. So, some perspective. When preachers and churches get out of perspective. So, God's word to the rescue again on preachers. 1 Corinthians 3, let's begin in verse 1. Brothers, I could not address you as spiritual, but as worldly, mere infants in Christ. Now, he's talking to a church. I gave you milk, not solid food, for you are not ready for it. Indeed, you are still not ready. You are still worldly. For since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere men? For when one says, I follow Paul, and another, I follow Apollos, are you not mere men? You see, these were preachers in Corinth. One was senior preacher. One was junior. Verse 5, what after all is Apollos, and what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The man who plants and the man who waters have one purpose, and each will be rewarded according to his own labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. By the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation as an expert builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should be careful how he builds. For no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. Well, human beings have a way to exalt preachers. And preachers can enjoy it. They can enjoy titles. They can enjoy special clothing. They can enjoy fame. They can enjoy sometimes, I've not really seen it much in churches of Christ, fortune. They can enjoy attention. I have seen that in churches of Christ. They can enjoy a following. That is, if they say it, it must be true. That happens a lot in blogs. I've seen guys follow blogs as if it says it by a certain person in a blog, then it must be true. Their names sometimes can pack an auditorium, at a lectureship, a coliseum, an auditorium. Max Lucado, and I'm not saying it's his fault or that he wants it to be done. At the Oak Hills Church in San Antonio, I've heard it oftentimes referred to as Max's church. And people want to attend when he preaches because of his fame. Well, what does Paul do? Well, Paul humbles preachers in this text, doesn't he? He minimizes the importance. He exalts God. He lifts up the church. He minimizes preachers. What does he say? Well, he says they're only servants. Only servants are instruments in the hand of God. Who gets the credit? God. And the Lord assigned these preachers, each one of them, his task, implying that each one of them is different, which is true. Every preacher's different. And every preacher has his strength. Every preacher has a task. And God gave it to them. They don't have any glory in it. God gave them that task. Who gets the credit? God. Now they can plant seed. Now that's not the complicated part, is it? That's not the complicated part in growing crops. Now, there are certain skills involved in that, admittedly. You've got to know where to plant, and you've got to prepare the soil, and there's a timing issue there. There are good times to plant and bad times to plant, so those are just kind of common sense things that one learns. It's passed down through the centuries, I guess. You read Farmer's Almanac. It's not all that big of a deal. In verse 6, I planted the seed. Apollos watered it. It's not rocket science, it seems to me, is what Paul describes. But God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. What are the complexities? It's God. God has the complexities. God is the one who handles that seed, breaking open, and that plant coming forth from that seed. Now that is complex. Can anybody explain that? I guess a botanist will try. I'm not sure any of us could understand it. But that is the complexity of it. And it's God's end. It's not man's end. God made it grow. God made the church grow. God's field. And it's our privilege, that is the preacher's privilege, to be a part of that process in the planting and the watering. It's our privilege to be God's fellow worker. And that is a privilege, just to be called God's fellow worker, to be on that team. That is a mighty privilege. Well then, Paul switches the figures of speech, the metaphors here, and goes to one of a builder, a master builder, an expert builder. And again, God gets all the credit. It's by His grace that God taught Paul to be a master craftsman, a builder. Now Paul can build a foundation to the church. Now the foundation, the key element to that foundation is Jesus Christ. That's the main component of that foundation. It's not concrete. It's not brick. It's Jesus Christ. There's no other key ingredient. But again, preachers are privileged to help build that foundation. Now folks, by definition, foundations are to be built upon. Foundations are not the structure. Foundations are to be built upon. Paul says, but each one should be careful how he builds, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. Foundations to be built upon. What does that mean? It means that we hope, we expect for our work as preachers to be built upon by others. Our work is not the end all. We don't resent somebody coming in and building on our work. We aren't jealous of somebody carrying on the work, improving on our work. We take pride in it if we are a master builder. We expect it. By definition, that's what happens. As an older person, an older preacher, we should take pleasure in it. Vision looks ahead to something that we may not even live to see the fruition of. That is what is so ugly about sometimes an older preacher resenting a younger preacher coming in and changing or building on what he had done, as if to say, well, what audacity for him to come in and do things what I have done on top of what I have done. By definition, that's what he ought to do. That's what you do on a foundation. You should be complimented. And you should have built and laid a foundation that is worthy of being built upon. That's what others have done for us. Just think what others have done long before our time here at 10th and Broad. They laid a foundation, many of whom we never knew. But they laid a foundation upon which we could build upon. And hopefully we have, and hopefully they would be pleased with what we have done. And hopefully we have laid a foundation upon which those who are younger can build upon what we have done. That is the nature of builders. So I personally pray and hope that the next preacher can help take things higher and greater than ever before here at 10th and Broad, and that 10th and Broad can be a leader in our city and our area in many ways, many that we have never even contemplated before. My hope is that I can do my part to help him And I know you will. And I hope you are excited about next Sunday. And we do not know what the decision will be, whether he will be accepted or whether he wants to accept it, whether you will accept him, whether the elders will agree. We just do not know. But I hope if he is the man the Lord leads to us, I hope we'll all be excited and be determined to go on into the next century. We're in the early part of this 21st century. That we'll go into it with great enthusiasm. Now, I'll tell you something that I believe with all my heart. I believe that it'll be more difficult for the next man than it has been for me. Because of our culture, because of our times, I believe that he'll have a harder time on many levels than I've had it. I think I had it harder than my predecessors. I hear about 10th and Broad in the glory days when they had to put chairs in the aisle and had a full house and all of that kind of business. I believe for many reasons, my tenure here was a little bit harder than it was back in the 40s and the 50s. America's changed. Well, I believe America's changed again, and I believe the new preacher is going to have a more difficult time than I had it. Times have changed again, and he's going to need more help and more prayers and more understanding, because these are tough times for churches, and I think you know that. You just look around and see how secular our culture has become. So we need to give our preacher, our new preacher, and our leaders our very best, our love, our cooperation, our prayers, as they lead us into the next century. This may be the century when the Lord returns. It just may be. I have no idea, but there's just something about this time as things get worse and worse. I just think, well, why won't the Lord come soon? Well, that's up to him, but let's live and work and serve like this will be the century when our Lord comes back. And that he'll find us unified and working and serving like he's never found us before. Well, in answer to the questions I sort of posed at the beginning of my comments this morning, the senior minister is ready to go. I've not been asked to go. I'm excited. The new preacher will be the spokesman for this church. It won't be me. He's the man. If you have a complaint about him, I'm going to be on his side. So I want you to know that. I'm pleased to be an associate minister here. I'll be on a part-time capacity. I will serve the church any way I can, in any role the elders want me to serve. And the new preacher asked me to serve. I'll just do the best I can. I appreciate the elders for allowing me to stay, giving me a place to hang my hat and stick my books. And I'm looking forward to the best years being ahead for the 10th and Broad Church. So let's go and let's enjoy next Sunday and be excited together. What do you say? Okay.